language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue.
We would be honored if you would join us.
How are you feeling? Your latest workups on your condition indicate that all damage has been reversed. Recovery is total. I believe you have been quite fortunate. No further thanks are necessary, Commander, but you are most welcome. It is my function and pleasure as a medical droid to help and heal human beings.
I am a Jedi, like my father before me.
Everybody, welcome to Star Wars From the Back to Tank. This is the Star Wars Rebels edition, and it feels good to be back.
Oh, yes, it does.
Talking about Star Wars Rebels, I was all amped and excited yesterday evening when it broadcasted. I had my popcorn out with a little circular carved cutout as well for extra excitement at the very bottom of the popcorn. Popcorn love, right?
You needed the force that was going to be strong with you that night.
Yeah, and buttery.
And buttery.
Yeah. Are we covering a kid's show, technically? Should we be talking like this?
Well, Dave Filoni did say that, basically. It's going to get darker.
And things did. We helped him out with that. We definitely took it down a darker road.
A darker, stickier road.
Yeah. All right. So we have a lot to get through. Star Wars Rebels, Heroes of Mandalore, Part 1 and Part 2. It was a two-parter, which is nothing new for Star Wars Rebels. They have created a little bit of a trend. I think it's to be expected at this point, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it was actually a smart thing to do, too, because you have to start strong with your season premiere.
Yeah, you have to. You got to give us, you know, the action and the story. And that's something that they definitely delivered. It's a little light on actual plot, I think, this week. But there was a method to the madness, and we're going to get into all of that, all the ins and outs of this week's premiere. And let us not forget, David, that this is the final season of Star Wars Rebels.
Yes, it is.
I don't know how I feel about that yet. I feel like it's way too short to be calling it quits.
After four seasons?
Yeah, I feel like the show... Not that it hasn't been good. I feel like the show has been a slow burn. We each season delivers the high points that we want as Star Wars fans. But I feel like we're just now getting to know our characters, and we're getting to that point where anything's possible now that we're emotionally invested into these characters.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up, because it's like been a really big question for a lot of Star Wars fans, is kind of like, why are we cutting Star Wars Rebels off so soon?
Yeah.
But, you know, in Dave Filoni's, you know, for his reasoning, is kind of like, we're fast approaching Star Wars timeline wise.
Yeah.
We're fast approaching where the movies take over.
Yeah. I think we all realized that there was going to be an expiration date. When you look at this analytically, absolutely. I think everybody knew that this show can't go on forever because of the expiration date. They bumped up this show so close to New Hope that it was never going to really be much more than a few years. In fact, there was even discussions and rumors it was going to end after season three. Filoni started making a lot of decisions that went against his original plans for the story, like when he did away with the Inquisitors very quickly. And his reason behind that was, hey, we have to start shaping this universe to resemble what it looks like when we are officially introduced for the first time to, you know, the Rebel Alliance and New Hope. And we've got to make things fit cohesively. And of course, in terms of canon as well.
That's why it was interesting that you bring that up, because like if you think back to season three's season ender, we had Twin Suns, mm-hmm. and then we had the Return to Lothal.
Right.
And then if you think about it, if they were to end Star Wars Rebels right there, mm-hmm. that would have actually been a good jumping point to Rogue One, New Hope, right. the movies.
Yeah.
Especially after Twin Suns. I mean, that one scene with Obi-Wan after he defeats Darth Maul.
Yeah.
And he's standing there looking at...
No, David, he didn't defeat Darth Maul. Darth Maul got a heart attack.
Yeah, he got a heart attack. But, like, after the scene where he goes, where he actually goes to the farm and actually looks out and you see Luke Skywalker run across the plains, you almost get a sense that basically, yeah, this is like the first chapter of New Hope.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's why I was like you. I mean, season three, you technically could have ended it there, but there's so many unanswered questions for this group.
Yeah, I agree.
Dave Filoni said during a celebration, this is one time when the thing that he learned most from Clone Wars was he wants to give his story an ending.
Yeah. Well, because he didn't really have he did have the opportunity, but he also didn't as well. I mean, he was forced to abruptly end due to the fact that there was an exchange of money and business contracts when Lucasfilm sold everything off to Disney. It put a lot of things with a big old question mark over. And Dave Filoni was one of the lucky ones, as well as the fans. We were lucky in the aspect that we were able to hold on to Clone Wars and keep it a permanent part of a permanent fixture of Star Wars canon. And Filoni lucked out as well. There's many expanded universe elements that didn't make the cut. And I feel like Clone Wars made the cut for a lot of reasons. Number one, George Lucas was also heavily involved with Clone Wars, and it'd be kind of odd to take something that he was very involved in and just say, "Nah,
throw it away.
Screw it. Yeah, we don't want it." So ultimately, that's the reason why they kept it. And, you know, like I said, Filoni lucked out and he got a new series, Star Wars Rebels, which is in a lot of ways an act two to Clone Wars.
It is.
And that kind of leads me to think, if we got an act one and we got a Filoni act two, we all know there's three acts, right?
Yes.
So is there something else? And I do not say Battle Heroes. What's that BS right now that they're airing those 5-minute shorts?
Oh, the Heroes of something of Destiny.
Heroes of Destiny.
Heroes of Destiny.
Yeah, I just can't get into that. I've tried, and they're schlocky and cheesy. They're made for little kids, whereas Rebels, it kind of crosses over between, and it kind of connects kids with the adults. Adults can sit and enjoy Rebels because it's so relevant to Star Wars canon. And I'm hoping we get something else. This might be the end of Star Wars Rebels, but I would love for Dave Filoni to finish his vision of Star Wars.
Yeah.
As we know, the guy's full of ideas, and an act three from Filoni would be amazing, because in a lot of ways, Star Wars Rebels is a sequel series to Clone Wars. And if we got another sequel series that involves, you know, many of his familiar themes and story ideas, and then he kind of meshes his characters that he's developed since Clone Wars, because we've seen the intermingling of characters from Clone Wars that have bled into now Star Wars Rebels, I would love for that to happen. And maybe kind of go into a time period that you're not so bound to certain rules. I mean, the time period between Revenge of the Sith, specifically a decade before New Hope, is so tight, especially with the release of Rogue One and now the Han Solo standalone film that's also going to probably be in the similar time period. You have all these things thrown, and it could definitely cause areas of problems for additional stories when you're dealing with an ongoing series. So next round, they got to be a little more careful when they pick their
timeline.
Their timeline. Yeah, absolutely. Now, moving into Star Wars Rebels a bit more, of course, David, we are going to break down the season premiere after our first break. We got some news to get through first. Star Wars Rebels news during the Star Wars Celebration in Orlando in 2017, just a few months ago, Dave Filoni announced that season 4 would be much darker, just like you said a minute ago, than previous seasons, but will have fun elements in as well. Of course, that's Star Wars, right? He also says that it was his decision to end the series, saying he is happy the show will have a definitive ending, unlike the Clone Wars TV show he had previously worked on. Additionally, Filoni has said that this season will be much more serialized, which I always thought the series was pretty much serialized, but according to this article, it's going to be even more serialized than we've seen before, meaning a lot of episodes are going to feed directly into each other. There isn't going to be the what we've seen in the past. We'll have two or three episodes that are very close together, and then weeks go by, months go by, and we're dealing with Sabine, then we're dealing with Hera, then we're dealing with Chopper. These things are all going to be very interconnected and heavily relying on each other in terms of narrative. One narrative is going to directly bleed into the next.
Which I'm really excited about, because if this is going to be the final season, they have to explain the narrative at this point. And it's one of those weaknesses of the last season that me and you constantly harped on, was the fact that they have to stick to the game plan.
Yep.
They can't constantly be branching out and giving us these little quirky side stories and forgetting what the whole story is about.
Yeah, and that was the strength of the first season. The first season was a lot more focused. Second season was also focused, but not as focused as the first. The third season felt a little like they were trying to find their ground, and understandably so.
And I basically say the reason behind that is because the showrunner changed.
Not only did the showrunner change from Filoni to, I believe, Justin Ridge, but also you have Rogue One they had to deal with. They had to start shaping. When Rebels first started, they didn't really need to worry about a whole lot of things. There were certain ideas they had that they needed to stick to and things they needed to refrain from exploring. But with the planning of Rogue One that went directly up against the planning for the second half of season two of Rebels and season three, and then you have the plan for standalones and Force Awakens, you got to start working within the narrative that the Lucasfilm Story Group has laid out. And that's probably the only thing that you can point to that's kind of been kind of negative in the when you're looking at the grand story of Star Wars Rebels. There are sporadic moments where we kind of go off to left field and you're not really sure why we're doing that. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that they're trying to buy their time a bit and trying to figure out exactly where they can fit their story without creating complications.
Yeah.
Now, there's a few things that I find interesting about Star Wars Rebels in this article that I just read. And these are similar thoughts and feelings that you and I have had, Dave. And again, this isn't negative. This is just a good, I want to say a sounding board to kind of discuss the final season and get everyone prepared. And also, as fans, vocally say vocally state our opinions and what we want to see in the final season. This article here, Dave, is from the AV Club. And I'm usually not a fan of other people's. I'm a Star Wars schnob. I like to stick to my own ideas. I don't like to read a whole lot of articles. Number one, I don't agree with a lot of Star Wars fans. I'm not as negative as a lot of them. However, This article, taken from the AV Club, written by Kevin Johnson, he has some pretty legit, not complaints, but questions about Star Wars Rebels and the final seasons. Again, I'm going to post this article on our website, so when this show goes on demand, you'll see this link as well. A little breathing room gives life to the premiere of Star Wars Rebels final season, he says. I'm going to read the entire paragraph, Dave, just so that it's cohesive and there's one cohesive thought there.
Okay.
If you haven't heard, this is Star Wars Rebels' fourth and final season. Throughout its run, Star Wars Rebels has had its heights for sure, but quite a few lows. I don't agree with that. Its primary issue, however, is that it has always felt inessential. I disagree with that as well. A side curiosity to Star Wars lore instead of something substantial and supplementary. I think that comment there, Dave, I think is an issue that a lot of bloggers and reviewers have. They don't quite understand what the Lucasfilm Story Group has done. And I agree in terms of relevancy to shaping the next movie. Okay. However, you can get a clear vision of what Kathleen Kennedy and the Lucasfilm Story Group has for the Star Wars universe by watching Star Wars Rebels. Yes. There's a lot of similar themes archetypes, motifs that are connecting directly into the movies we see. There is a singular voice in all expanded universe iterations of Star Wars in a way that we've never seen before, because before they would be inessential stories. The expanded universe that was retconned was inessential.
Yeah.
They were just side stories that built up the mythos, yes, but they all had separate voices. They felt almost like separate identities. This, everything we're getting now, has a singular voice and a singular vision. Everything is cohesively forming together. Okay? I just feel like a lot of people are missing that, who aren't fully invested in understanding and analyzing Star Wars Rebels and other versions of our EU that we're getting. All right, so the next part of the article says, it's always felt like the show never quite knew how to develop its cast of misfits. Kanan, Hera, Sabine, Zeb, Chopper, and particularly Ezra has been inconsistent at best, and the episodes and the writing of them struggled to give them a real overall sense of purpose. There are still a lot of questions. Now, this is the part I agree with, the questions.
Yes.
The question is, why is Lothal so important? What happened to the romance between Kanan and Hera? Why has Ezra matured so erratically? Those three questions, there's some validity.
Yeah, that's part of the narrative overall of Star Wars Rebels for the past three seasons.
Yeah, and those questions do need to be tied back around. I feel like his... Jesus, David.
Sorry.
Holy shit. What is this, not professional radio? I feel like his argument is sound, but I think his reasoning behind his argument is a bit flawed. For example, he has come to the conclusion that the show has never quite developed the character, our characters. And I don't think that's the case. I feel like Kanan and Ezra are fully realized individuals and characters that can stand on their own two feet within Star Wars history.
The question becomes now with them is like, where do they take them at this point? Because just like what you said, I mean, they're already fleshed out as far. I think that Kanan and Ezra are fleshed out to the point where they are where they need to be. But the question now becomes is like, well, what do you do with them? Because technically they shouldn't be around by the beginning of the original series.
Right. And this is where his reasoning is justified, or his questions are justified, but I think his logic is a bit flawed, because the so-called issue of lack of development isn't lack of development. It's stutter stepping, and they are stutter stepping. I've said this time and time again, particularly with season three. They're creating distracting narratives to keep us occupied, because there's only so much things they can truly get into when it comes to the Rebel Alliance. They can't really explore it too much because of Rogue One and because of New Hope. So there is a lot of, hey, we're about to get there. We're gonna tap your penis and tease you, and then we're gonna hold back.
Yeah.
And that's due to the nature of Star Wars Rebels not conflicting what may be planned down the road, or things that have already come out. And that can also be led back to his inessential aspect, saying, well, if it was essential, then they would just plow forward. But you're never going to have a cartoon dictate what the movies are going to do. You can work, as I said, singular voice working together to tell a big, giant, cohesive story that feels like one. Yes. And that's why I call this essential. However, you're not going to have a cartoon that airs on Disney XD dictate what will happen first. They can create foreshadowing. They can hint and prelude to things. But actual decisions executed is going to be saved for the movies. And that's going to be the flaw that you're going to find with a connected universe where everything's connected. Comic books, video games, TV shows, and movies. The movie is the biggest moneymaker. It's the tentpole of your connected universe. It will always be the lead in where we take this story for the mainstream. So, yes, his issues are sound, but his logic is a bit flawed as to why they're doing it. He's calling it bad storytelling. I'm calling it, this is what they have to do. Because when you break down what we get each week, it's solid. It's good. It's well done. The characters are there. We understand their motivational drives. Some of them I'm not as interested in, like Sabine. I can give two shits. I never have cared. I think her character has kind of been shoehorned in to make us care. And I don't really find a lot of interest in that, which we're going to get into that when we discuss the episode.
Yeah.
And what this whole Mandalore thing truly means. However, do you agree with me or do you agree with the analysis by this gentleman over at AV Club?
No, I agree with you because like the questions he brings up are valid. They are valid. But some of them are basically like, I don't agree that basically his assessment that Ezra still has room for development. Because he calls it erratic maturity something.
There's definitely room for more development. I think you can say that about any character. You can always create more situations and watch our characters evolve. That's a given. But I don't feel like we haven't gotten enough on that.
Exactly. Yeah.
We're dealing with 25-minute episodes because of commercials. And you're looking at what? How many episodes a season are we getting? I mean, 14, 15 episodes a season, roughly?
15 to 20.
So, I mean, there's not a lot there to just fully say, all right, we're going to learn about Ezra, and he took a piss today, then he took a poop, and then he whacked it to Sabine. Like, we're not going to learn everything about these characters in a 25-minute serialized cartoon.
Yeah. Because, like, the thing that I feel is they've done a really great job of telling Ezra's story as a young boy dealing with the fact that he has the powers of the Force.
Right.
And all the moments that we've had with Ezra where he's dealing with the conflict of the light side versus the dark has been really well done. And it actually has been really molded to what Kathleen Kennedy and the Lucas Story Group have set forth right now. You know, like the whole battle between the balance.
Right.
When they introduced the Bendu during Ezra's story, okay. It made sense. And
thank you, David, because calling the Bendu inessential is just not understanding what they're doing. I mean, the Bendu and the relevance of what that entire aspect of last season meant for the universe of Star Wars, if our theories end up being correct, which I'm fairly certain we are. Then guess what? It's very, very essential.
Yeah.
It's not dictating what needs to be done, but it is setting a tone, a tonality to the universe.
Now I understand that basically during last season, Ezra didn't interact with the Bendu, but you have to understand that this is Star Wars Rebels at its core is Ezra's story. This is Ezra's story. And everyone around Ezra affects Ezra. So in essence, yes, Kanan learned from the Bendu, but Kanan's teaching Ezra what he's learned from the Bendu make Ezra a stronger character.
Let me add to that just a bit, Dave. It is Ezra's, it's not necessarily Ezra's story. It is, but it isn't. Let me explain. It's Ezra's perspective.
Ezra's perspective,
it's
yes.
Ezra's perspective, but the show is about the rebels. Is about the group, the ensemble, group of individuals getting from A to B and correcting injustice in the galaxy for the common cause of what would end up becoming the true Rebel Alliance. But it is seen from his perspective. It isn't just his story in the fact that it's all about him, but it's most definitely written from his perspective. You know what, Dave? On that note, we do need to go to a very quick break. And then when we come back, we're going to break down the ins and outs of the season 4 premiere of Star Wars Rebels. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Not really, no.
In order to ensure the security and continuing stability, the Republic will be reorganized into the First Galactic Empire!
The Rain Man Show.
The Rain Man Show.
Go ahead, Andrew.
Minister Kevin Swanson, who holds notoriously homophobic views, said Houston had
bad sinned by having a very, very aggressively pro-homosexual mayor. Unless Houston repents, unless New Orleans repents, they will all likewise perish. He told his radio show.
How does he get a radio show?
That is the message that Lord Jesus Christ is sending.
No, it's not.
Right now to America. These comments come days after Christian radio personality Rick Wiles linked Houston's progressive attitudes with the storm as well.
Okay, so gay people have magical powers. They're basically Aquaman. They can control the weather and the sea life.
Why wouldn't you want to be their friend then?
Yeah, exactly. I wish I was gay. If I can have magical powers, I would go down on a dude. Like, hey, listen, go down on a dude and you can now command the weather. I'm like, all right.
Sure.
Point me to the nearest dig, please.
I thought I had to get bit by a spider, but apparently I had to get bit by some fashion.
That's my origin story. My origin story is to get plowed in the ass.
For more Rain Man, visit RainManShow.com.
Holodeck 3 program is reinstated.
Open sesame!
Stay true to its course and the politically intertwined, multi-layered theme of the show Discovery, which we're going to get into that. We've already discussed it in bits and pieces throughout the last two or three episodes that we've done, but it's staying true to that. The very name itself, Discovery, isn't there just to describe conveniently the name of the ship they're on. It has to do with a lot of things. Discovery of who you are. Discovery of the unknown. Discovery of exotic, unknown cultures. Star Trek from the Holodeck, the Discovery Edition. Breaking down, analyzing, and discussing every episode of the new hit Trek series. Search for it on iTunes and Stitcher. Simply search From the Holodeck. You can also find it on the Rain Man Digital app. Just search Rain Man Digital from the iTunes App Store or Google Play.
Have you ever wanted something so bad that you do just about anything for it? Well, that's exactly how we feel about you. That's right. AdamandEve.com wants you so bad. We're giving you 10 free gifts with your first order. You heard me right. That's 10 free gifts to spice up your love life. First, you'll get a sexy surprise for her. Second, an adventurous toy for him. And third, a little something we know you'll both enjoy. Plus, you'll get 6 full-length adult movies on DVD. And number 10, free shipping on your entire order. That's 10 free gifts for you shy types who've never tried Adam and Eve before. Just go to AdamandEve.com and select any one item. It could be an adventurous new toy, a sexy piece of lingerie, or anything you desire. Just enter offer code DEAL30 at checkout, and you'll get all 10 free gifts, including free shipping. That's offer code DEAL30. That's DEAL30 at AdamandEve.com.
No, no, you must go!
Hello, this is Stormtrooper 1. This is just a friendly reminder. Please leave us a review on Stitcher. Go to Stitcher.com and search From the Bat to Take. Every review left helps us get seen by more people. And we thank you so much. Remember, go to Stitcher.com and search From the Bat to Take. Thank you.
This is so exciting to see in your side.
Hey, you're not supposed to be in the studio.
Whoops!
See that red light? Yeah, that means I'm live and on the air.
This is very, very bad.
Get out.
You need a teacher. I could show you the ways of the Force.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Star Wars From the Back to Tank, the Star Wars Rebels edition. Feels good to be back and discussing one of my favorite shows on television, Star Wars Rebels. It's nice to... I never thought it would happen, Dave. I never envisioned the day where we would actually get weekly Star Wars stories, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Weekly.
Never would I have imagined.
Never would I have imagined.
Yeah, so it's been a great time, a great run. We're going to try to celebrate this final season in style. We're going to get some hot Star Wars chicks in here in the studio. Wait, is that inappropriate? We probably shouldn't be talking like that with everything that's going on right now. You know, maybe we should... Yeah, next
just keep that on the download.
Yeah, all we need is someone tweeting us hashtag Me Too to the Star Wars fan. Yeah, like I hate you guys.
I hate you.
I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm just trying to bring some a lighter mood,
a little humor.
Yeah, I don't want everyone to lose the lose the will to live. Just trying to make everybody happy. Make jokes.
Can't we all just get along?
Yeah, come on. All right, so it's time to get into this episode. Star Wars Rebels, the season 4 premiere, titled Heroes of Mandalore, part 1 and 2, written by Henry Gilroy for part 1, and part 2, Stephen Melching. Written by Henry Gilroy, Stephen Melching, and then part 2, written by Christopher Yost, directed by Stuart Lee and Saul Reese. So there's a lot of heavy hitters from the Star Wars Rebels family coming in to take the helm and execute this season, our final season premiere. So Heroes of Mandalore is a 2-part television special that served as the 4th season premiere of Star Wars Rebels. Before making its television premiere, the first part of the special was screened, David, at the Star Wars Celebration in Orlando. The second part was shown at a fan expo in Toronto. We need to start getting to these.
We do.
We need to get off our ass. We get accepted. We get the press badges to get there.
We were a force at one of the celebrations a long time ago.
Yeah, we need to get there. We just need to get there. In fact, you know what? My promise to you, David, and the listeners, is that the next TV show that comes out, because you know we're going to get another one, and we're definitely going to cover it. We're going to get to these expos, and we're going to become a part of it, and we're going to get some interviews. I don't know why we don't get off our asses, but anyways, all right. So let's get into the episode. The synopsis for the premiere is Star Wars Rebels. The Rebels work together with Clan Ren to free Sabine's father from the clutches of the Empire on Mandalore. However, deadly consequences await them at the end. Now, Dave, if you remember, at the close of the season 3 finale, we had seen the remaining Rebel fleet leave to the rendezvous with the rest of the Rebels on Yavin 4.
Yes.
They even name dropped that, which I thought was really exciting, which is honestly what I was really looking forward to seeing.
Yes.
In this premiere. And Hera promises to help Sabine and the Mandalorians on an upcoming mission. And I'm assuming this is the upcoming mission that we witnessed for the season 4 premiere. Now, just to kind of set the tone with our discussion, Dave, I was a bit disappointed with this season 4 premiere.
A little bit, yeah.
And not to be a troll and not to be a negative, I definitely think it might be the weakest of the premieres. And I don't know if it has to do with the fact that they didn't cover the main mythos of Star Wars, and they kind of dealt with a side story of a side character. I don't know. Maybe it's the lack of connection that the Mandalorians even have to anything relevant currently in the Star Wars universe. I don't know. I really don't know. Maybe this is a product of them trying to shoehorn Sabine's story and build and give her development before the show is over.
Originally, I was like thinking that, but After really thinking about it, after watching the episode a couple times, and then reading what Dave Filoni's plan or his plan is, it kind of makes sense, because just like what you said, last time we left off, Hera told Sabine that they were just going to help her with a upcoming mission.
Yeah.
So then we jump right into the upcoming mission.
But this is the question I have, Dave. And tell me if it's valid, if it's a valid concern. I look at everything from the writing aspects, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, writing 101 for television tells you that you can't deviate too far from your main narrative, which is the perspective of course, Ezra and the beginnings of this rebel sect, right? And yes, their connection eventually to the Rebel Alliance. That, for the most part, is a layman's way of explaining the pitch for Star Wars Rebels. But then you deviate to this Mandalorian story, and I never really quite understood what it does for Star Wars Rebels and what it does for Star Wars as a whole. obviously we're getting geared to get to the final actions of our crew. And we're all anxious to see how this is going to connect to New Hope, if at all. How does Mandalore factor in?
The question becomes,
Dave, Mandalore has never even been a relevant fixture within the Star Wars universe when it comes to movies. So calm down, Mandalore fans.
Yes.
When it comes to movies, they're pretty irrelevant. Outside of Boba Fett wearing the armor. So how is the Mandalore storyline and Sabine going to be connected to the Rebel Alliance and their end goal? And I'm not saying it hasn't been, and I'm not saying it's not going to. I'm wondering how this will matter to the bigger picture of Star Wars Rebels.
The bigger picture, I have to really think about this. The bigger picture of Mandalore wasn't what are they doing in Rebels. The bigger question that everyone said, if they didn't cover this episode, was, okay, where are the Mandalores during the fight with the Empire?
Exactly.
And this two-parter, by the end of it, we get that idea that basically the Mandalores are so decimated at this point that their whole goal is just to fight on Mandalore.
So working on rebuilding their own home.
Yeah, because think about it. I mean, the planet is decimated. Sabine made the comment to Ezra that basically, when Ezra said, you know, your planet's really desolate. It's desert around here. How'd you grow up here? And Sabine makes the comment that, well, back then when I was a child, there were lush green forests and everything, and plains and grass that was growing in this deserted area. But because of the war on Mandalore, it utterly decimated the planet. And because of the civil war between the houses. Now with the Empire here, it makes it even worse. And the whole point was to show that Mandalore, even though, as fans, I know out there want to believe that basically Mandalorian warriors and the Mandalorian culture are super strong and they're like the Klingons and stuff like that.
The Klingons? Hold your tongue.
Yes.
Hold your tongue. David, always cross-streaming on these shows. Why?
Because I'm trying to develop unity between the fandoms.
Really? You're going to hold up your own Mandalorian sword and unite the houses?
Yeah, pretty much.
Star Trek and Star Wars?
Star Trek and Star Wars. But like, the whole point was to actually show that the reason why we don't see the Mandalores further on in the war is because they're so decimated. What are they going to do?
Right.
They can't do anything because their entire planet's been decimated. And there's only, when you watch the very end, I think there's only four houses left.
Right. Okay, so we're dealing with a story of rebuilding, right?
Yes.
They have gone through a civil war. The Empire has manipulated them to their own demise. Fine. But what does this mean for the bigger story of Star Wars? When you're dealing with a cohesive storyline where every story matters to the bulk and the one singular voice, is this just a way to add development to a character that doesn't really matter to the bigger Star Wars story? And is it going to connect? Because that's what Star Wars Rebels has done so well so far, is cohesively connect A and B. And then you have this side story dealing with Mandalore that doesn't ultimately, up to now, truly affect the Rebels. Yes. And now, let's say, for example, they have been working towards uniting the Mandalorian houses because they're going to take part in the fight against the Empire, right? Well, obviously, we know we don't see that in a grand scale, in a big scale. Of course, we don't see it because we don't see it in New Hope. We don't see it in Empire Strikes Back. We don't see it in Return of the Jedi, which is the story of the Rebel Alliance. So it would make sense that we would see these elements or these factors. So I think we can definitively say they do not take a part in this fight. They're busy possibly rebuilding their own home, their own homeworld, and uniting the once warring factions together, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then why even tell this story? What does it do for the story of Star Wars Rebels? What does it do for the story of the Star Wars universe besides give us a bit of distraction while they're trying to bide their time? And that's the connection I'm looking for. There's got to be a justification, which I'm willing to bet we're going to get down the road. I'm not griping. I'm just posing a question.
And the other point.
Do you hold on, Dave, just for a second. Do you see where I'm going with this? In order to justify taking away from the season 4 premiere and much of last season, they're going to need to put a little bit more relevance
on this moment
and what it means for Star Wars.
Yeah, I do agree with you with it. But because like it's really difficult to see what the importance of this premiere was unless the importance is later on during the season that basically, okay, it all ties together.
Every action we've seen so far matters to the ongoing revolving story of Star Wars. And the Mandalore aspect, I don't see it really fitting into the bigger picture. And they're going to have to draw those connections before the end. Otherwise, it's going to be remembered, much like what this guy was discussing in the AV Club, as kind of sporadic stories. Are inessential. And for the most part, Star Wars Rebels, in my opinion, has been very essential. But then there's moments like that you can point to and say, well, what does this matter? And the grand story of Star Wars, what does this mean? What does this moment in time mean? And there might be listeners out there or Star Wars Rebels fans that said, you know what, not everything needs to mean something. It might just be a way to tell more stories. And that's fine. But that's not what we've been accustomed to since the buyout of Disney and Lucasfilm, or to Lucasfilm.
And
that hasn't been what we've been accustomed to. We've been privy to a lot of stories that matter, that are essential to the ever-growing development of the Star Wars universe.
And to tie it to what we discussed before the break, it's serialized. This is supposed to be a serialized series now. So to actually say that basically, well, this moment in the season doesn't tie to anything, considering not just Star Wars, but Star Wars Rebels.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, that's a problem.
Yeah. And even, I would say, again, a disappointing element of the season premiere was the arc generator weapon. I think there was, and this is purposely, this isn't us as Star Wars fans running crazy, because that's what we do as fans. We pick up a little bit of a story nugget and we just run away with it and we start blogging about what this means.
Yeah.
That isn't one of those moments. I feel like they purposely set up this element to Sabine when she said she created weapons for the Empire. I mean, I was expecting some type of connection to Krennic, some type of connection to the science division that we were introduced to in Rogue One, as well as the Rogue One prequel. I was expecting connections to possibly Galen Erso.
Yeah.
Galen's Erso. I was hoping for a connection to Galen Erso's, and we didn't get that. It was kind of a drop the ball moment. Like, well, there is literally no connection. The arc weapon. Okay.
Plus the thing for me.
Do you feel like they were trying to draw those, kind of connect us to that aspect last year? Do you think they were trying to get people to think that last year?
I think they were trying last year.
When you're talking about secret weapons of the Empire.
Yeah.
And they already introduced the science / weapons division that helped shape Rogue One.
Yeah.
Why did you not utilize that?
Exactly.
As part of the bigger story of Star Wars.
And my bigger question was like, well, if Sabine was part of this, why didn't we see this in the past? Because like it would have been nice to actually beforehand have this have a moment in like season 3 or something where they deal with establishing that Sabine was part of the science division.
Right.
It honestly just felt kind of dropped on you that basically, hey, Sabine created this weapon because she worked at the Imperial science division. When you didn't establish it beforehand. And that's why I was like you. I was like, I was hoping that I would see more calls to maybe to Krennic, maybe Operation Stardust. That would have been nice.
Right. And I don't need everything to be directly connected to the Death Star per se, But we do know that there's a massive weapons division right now working on weapons to fight against the Rebel Alliance. It would have been a nice little connection to the bigger story that we keep hearing about when it comes to Star Wars. But I do say that the highlight once again, Dave, goes to one man. And that's Thrawn.
Yes.
He was barely in the season premiere, and yet his appearance won me over and made the episode that much better, because it's the little nuances of his personality that's always makes his appearance a win. And at every word he says, much like Thrawn himself, where he's very careful, he's like a very cautious lion. He doesn't just walk to walk. He doesn't just run into walls. There's a calculated movement. There's calculation to all his movement. And you see that even when he talks, every line of dialogue that they write for him
matters
and is purposely crafted to explain who he is as an individual. And the disdain that he had for the Mandalorian governor that was leading this violent crusade on his own people for power and conquest. He didn't like it. He didn't like his methods. He didn't like that he turned the weapon on his own people. He questioned his own loyalty to his heritage and his history. I mean, to have a villain that cares about those things, it really throws your brain into the gray area of politics.
Yes.
And it questions the go-to good and bad that we're so used to seeing in literature, that we've all been accustomed to accepting. There's always a protagonist, there's always an antagonist, and the protagonist in the story is good and great and wonderful, and then the antagonist is evil and horrible. But when you have a villain like Thrawn, you question that. You question his motives, because Thrawn, despite the fact that he worked for the Empire, I would not define him as an evil individual like we would most of the people on board the Imperial train. And that's what makes this character so unique and so interesting. And it makes you want to know more about him.
Yeah, absolutely. Because like that whole dialogue with Thrawn and the governor had me like cracking up, because it's like Thrawn, we all know Thrawn is a villain of some sort. However, he's a villain to everybody, not just like the rebels, but to like some of the other Imperial soldiers. Like the way he talks to the governor of Mandalore at
this
point,
governor.
He's like, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Really? You're going to be doing this. And he goes down the plan, and the whole time, he's not angry. Like you'd expect, like, say, Darth Vader or Tarkin to have like this tone of anger behind it. No. Thrawn is more like, okay, I'm just smarter than you, and I know that this is not a good idea.
Yeah.
And it's that sarcasm that basically adds to that villainy of his.
Yeah. And that's the other thing that's so good about that scene, was not only was he questioning the fact, you know, the ethics of this individual, but also at the same time, he questioned his tactics. It wasn't just an ethical question. It was a tactical question as well. He knew it wasn't going to work. I mean, you're going to turn this weapon on your own people. What makes you think they're going to go along with this? He knew that it wasn't going to work, that it was going to turn the tide of this civil war against him, because he's using weapons that directly affect individual Mandalorians themselves. And it attacks the very essence of a Mandalorian soldier. It attacks their identity, which I thought was another great moment in this premiere, was the explanation. Yes, if you've studied the EU throughout the years, this is nothing new. However, to hear it be said actual vocally on TV or a movie, and you hear the explanation of why the Mandalorian armor is so important, that it's not just armor, it's their history, Sabine's armor was what, 500 years old, she said.
Yeah, I thought that scene was really smartly done.
It was a great way to explain the way the Mandalorians actually, who they actually are as individuals, and you see that there's a certain amount of honor. There's a lot of it's a little bit of a samurai to them, like how the samurai are, how everything is a tradition, everything is carefully planned out, their movements, their tactics, everything goes back to their history and who they are as warriors. And that's one moment I really thought was a win as well for the season premiere, was the explanation that this armor is their identity.
And that's what I liked, that
it's very spiritual.
In a way, they used Ezra to question it, because remember, Ezra is the one who brought up the whole point. Well, if that's the case, if the armor is, if the weapon affects the armor you wear, why don't you just change your armor? And like the look on all the Mandalorians' faces when Ezra asked this, and Ezra kind of just stops, looks around, and it's kind of like a learning lesson for Ezra when Sabine tells him this is about tradition, history. Her armor's 500 years old. You know,
Ezra is such a simpleton sometime.
He is, but this was a point when, in a way, this is kind of like, you could kind of tie this as, you know, like what he says is the erratic maturity of Ezra. This is a learning. This is something that could define Ezra.
Yeah, learning about other cultures and
learning
their traditions.
About other cultures and basically understanding about the power of tradition.
Yeah, I agree. Now, another thing, Dave, that they touched on at the very beginning of the season four premiere was something that the gentleman from the AV Club article had touched on as well, and it's the relationship between Kanan and Hera, which, by the way, Dave, they don't have a relationship, okay? I'm just going to let you guys know there is no
relationship.
I mean, that's been the ongoing joke now for 4 years, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we were like, they're obviously into each other. It was stated in the prequel book, A New Dawn, that they like each other, that there's a thing going on. There's some sexual tension. It was stated in the cartoon. It's stated that they care about each other. But then you hear interviews from these actors. They're like, yeah, there's no relationship. Yeah, there's no relationship. Like, what are you talking about? Quit being all Disney XD about it. They're boning.
We just don't see it.
Exactly. He's pulling on those tentacles. Just deal with it. So, however, that being said, they pretty much stated it without giving any room for actual evasion this time. And I felt that was something that was needed, because it's been kind of a slow burn for their relationship.
It's still a slow burn.
But at least Kanan stated it, and he's kind of flirting. He was a little bit flirtatious in his message and his tone. And I liked it, because I am not a big advocate of shipping in relationship. It's called shipping, right, Dave? Where you got to root for characters to be together. But yeah. I mean, that's something that, since we've been introduced to these groups or these individuals, they've cared about each other at a very intimate level, not just, you know, as comrades, but they had a sense of intimacy to the relationship. And I feel like that would be a good win if there is, they actually state it and there's a bit of resolve to that. And then Kanan dies at the end. That'd be great.
That'd be great.
No, but I'm saying I like tragedy. And if they were to do that, it would be very Princess Leia and Han Solo about it.
Before they bone, he dies.
You know, like where they finally came to terms with each other, with their feelings overtly. And then unforeseen occurrences or circumstances, you know, pull that rug out from under them, and they never truly get to
be together.
And that would be, I feel like that would be such a tragic moment, and it would be very fitting for Star Wars in a lot of ways. You have a similar.
You have Shakespearean elements.
Yeah. You have it in Revenge of the Sith and Anakin and his entire story. And you have the moments of in Rogue One, the final moments of Jen Erso and Cassian. Even though I don't feel like they were romantically involved, it was a very intimate moment. The few final seconds of their life. Maybe you can see potentially a future there. Whatever it may be, the point is that this kind of a theme and a tragic loss of something that never happened.
Yeah.
And could have. So I think that would be a great way to end the show as well. You know what, Dave? I think that concludes our overall discussion. Give me your final thoughts on the premiere before we close out this week's discussion.
My final thoughts on the premiere was it felt very planned, and it took a couple times for me to watch it to really get behind it. But overall, knowing the game plan of Dave Filoni and the Lucas Story Group, they continued right off the bat. They basically did... They essentially are doing what they're doing with the current movies. Pick up right where we left off. Don't give any time in between. Just basically... Last time we left off, we were told that basically there's going to be an important mission on Mandalore. Start up on the important mission on Mandalore. Much like in episode 7, we left off with Rey handing over the lightsaber to Luke. In the upcoming movie, apparently we're going to start right at that scene where Luke takes the lightsaber. So... I like the overall continuity that they're going with their stories. But again, what does the whole Mandalore storyline mean to Star Wars in the end? Is it going to matter to this narrative, the narrative of Star Wars Rebels? Never mind about the narrative of the entire Star Wars universe. I just want to know, how important was this moment to the characters of the Rebels crew? To Sabine, to Ezra, to Kanan, because those are the ones that ultimately we're watching this season to see where their lives go before our season finale ends at, I believe it's episode 15. So overall, the two-parter episode was smartly done, but it does leave me with a little hesitation to see what's upcoming next.
All right, Dave. I would have to say this episode was mediocre at best.
Yeah.
It was fun because that's what Star Wars is. It's very hard to deny that you don't get swept up in the Star Wars swashbuckling antics. You mix that with the theme of Star Wars and the fantastically composed music, and you do get swept up. But when you start breaking this down analytically like we do, there was a lot of problems with the writing. And yes. I felt like I had a little ticker next to me, a little time ticker and a pencil. And I marked every time a story development happened. Okay? I didn't have one mark for the entire opening episode, the first half. Nothing happened. There was no story. It was one drawn out action scene with zero development. Then it was about 15 minutes into the second half with only 9 minutes left in the entire season 4 premiere, where I actually started ticking two or three things here. One was for Thrawn. One was for Ezra and his eye opening moment when he understood what Sabine was talking about in terms of her armor. I did another one for the arc generator. I did another one for the resolve of Sabine's leadership over Mandalore. There was just nothing there. It was four ticks. The entire 47-minute premiere, there was nothing there. There was a lot of fluff, but literally no story. And this is the season 4 premiere. The season 4 premiere has got to give it to you. It's got to give it to you fast and hard. Right?
Absolutely.
And I felt like they just delivered one of the most mediocre fluff episodes I think we've ever witnessed in for a season premiere of Rebels in the 4 years. And I make it sound like it's been forever, like witness. There's only been four. But I mean, when you're dealing with the final season.
And when you take it into context about the past couple of premieres, some of those past premieres, season 2 premiere, fantastic.
Yeah.
Season 3 premiere was really good.
Yeah, and I think that's ultimately the reason why I think this premiere failed. It didn't really... It jump-started the season, I guess, with action and a bang. But from what we've been used to and accustomed to, it just didn't really deliver. And maybe this was something they needed to do, Dave, to kind of tie up this loose end side story pertaining to the Mandalore and Sabine. Maybe they needed to wrap it up. So who knows? We will see. But I'd probably give this episode probably a C.
Same here.
Yeah, it's a very mediocre episode. I want to thank everybody for listening to our discussion this week on Star Wars Rebels. I do love Star Wars. Don't get mad at me. I'm not a troll. But hey, I have to call it out, right? We have to be honest. So we will be back next week, of course, and every week during the entire run of Star Wars Rebels, the final season. We're going to go to a very quick break again, David. This part of the show is done. The Star Wars Rebels edition is done. So if you're listening live, you can keep listening. And when we come back, we're going to get into our regular Star Wars show. If you're listening on demand, this show is about to end. But you can definitely look for other on-demand broadcasts coming up right after this one.
May the Force be with you.
Hello, this is Stormtrooper 1. And if you've missed any portion of the show, you can always head over to FromTheBackToTank.com and listen to the show at your leisure. We're also on Stitcher, Smart Radio, Stitcher.com, search Bacta, and add us to your favorites. Thank you. And listen responsibly. And may the Force be with you. And long live. Thank you for listening to From the Back to Tank. And From the Back to Tank is executive produced by Michael Flores and Dustin Lucas. Hosted by Michael Flores, David Sabal. You can find out more about our show by going to www.fromthebacktotank.com. You can also find us on Twitter at FromBackToTank, as well as Facebook, facebook.com/FromTheBackToTank.